Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 180. This is a show about all things Linux, hardware, software, tips and tricks, and we bring it to you almost every week, been pretty consistent lately. And by we, I mean myself, Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, and my good friend, the Linux maven, the door-to-door geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin. How's it going, Door?
Wow, Coop. Seems like I just saw you, and we... No, we did not sleep in the same bed. No, we did not.
Nope, not if anybody asks.
No, things are going pretty good out here, even though I came back to fire and brimstone. basically, it calmed down right after I landed kind of thing. So it's good to be home, sleep in my own bed again, but I will say I had a hell of a time.
And of course, the hell of a time he's talking about is Linux Fest Northwest. We survived. I am officially an old man. I need to hang up my drinking card. It's dead. The dream is not alive anymore. Now, I'll bring it back around. But needless to say, met a lot of... we're going to keep it the recap short. Met a lot of great listeners, including Joe Hecht and his wife, Linda. Very, very lovely people. They had the opportunity to meet us and introduce us to some great food at a great dinner that we had. That was very welcome.
Do you remember the name of the place?
Oh, man. I knew you'd say that.
It was like Aviation, I think.
I'll look it up. It was in Bellingham. There were two. I'll find. Oh, Anthony's. It was Anthony's.
Anthony's.
Good Fantastic job. Seafood restaurant down by the bay.
Well, but I'm sorry. The main reason we even got to go there was Cody being what I consider to be a customer service expert. Because of literally years. This is not something he just flicked a switch. Because of years of what he does, he knows customer service. He understands customer service. And he was able to see what was happening to Martin as he was trying to book the room and got literally fired up. And everyone else was like, what? And he literally dropped his bag when he got in the room and said, nope, I'm going downstairs. And he came upstairs with $100 worth of gift certificates. Which turns out you would need for the appetizers at this place.
It wasn't that expensive. So, but yeah.
It was kind of expensive.
Yes. An associate at the hotel made some insulting remarks out of tune. I spoke to management. They apologized and they gave us some gift cards, which I didn't expect. I thought, hey, great. So now, you know, in our group, we had some little bit of cash to go start a meal. And yeah, but it was fantastic.
Well, yeah, and that's the whole thing. Now, I know Cody. I know he did not go down expecting money in return. He went down literally to make sure, A, the guy knew what he did was wrong, how what he did was wrong, what he should have done, and making sure that basically his management knew, look, he did make us happy, but please make sure he doesn't do this again to other people who are not as, dare I say, nice.
Yes.
So thank you very much, Cody, for maintaining the professionalism at what should be a professional institution. Number one. Number two, I was shocked, I say, that the fact that we went to this place, Anthony's, it turned out to be prom night. We had a party of 11. Yeah. And once we got there, they were literally like, no, we cannot seat you. And then Martin like put his hand up and everyone backed up. And then he turned around and in 2 seconds, both of the ladies were smiling at him. I said, dude, he's got this.
Smooth like
literally
butter.
40 seconds later. Yeah. Literally 40 seconds later. They said, come on, guys, we have you a table. I was like, whoa.
Yep. Martin, the Wrangler Obando.
Oh, he is, I don't know. He has powers. I figured that out. He has powers.
He certainly does. But yeah, we met some other good listeners. We met David Witham, HBR yes. contributor.
Dude, unbelievably nice guy. And that's what you're going to hear a lot about that fest. Unbelievably blank. Unbelievably clean. Unbelievably well executed, unbelievably well planned, unbelievably nice, unbelievably cordial, unbelievably friendly. That's what how I describe that fest.
In fact, I'd rather do our recap more justice and maybe we could talk more about it next week, but we do have a guest this week. Does that sound good to you, Dor?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. But overall, yeah, had a lot of fun. We survived. Dor landed in Baltimore. And for those of you who don't know, yes, he does live there. And if you don't know what's going on in Baltimore right now, stop being on the internet for just 5 or 10 minutes. Go listen to the news. Anyway, yeah, it's a bit of a situation there. But regardless of that, we're gonna stuff all that aside. We have an excellent guest here, and this is a good friend of ours, an excellent person in the community, someone of very high regard, and someone that I literally have made a point to talk about every single episode that I have hosted this show. Of course, I'm talking about our good friend Jonathan Nado from the Accessible Computing Foundation. Jonathan, how are you doing this evening?
Very well, gentlemen. Thank you for having me on. And so who is this person we're having on, this special guest?
Oh, we're going to announce that later after you're off the show.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I don't want to steal your thunder. I don't want to, you know. I'm talking about you, you dope. Yeah. Yes, but thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to grace us with your presence. Oh, Admiral.
No, thanks for having me on, guys. It's greatly appreciated for the opportunity to spend time with you.
Definitely.
Well, and I'll say this, just the last thing about the fest and event. The only thing missing was quite literally Tracy Holzler Holtz, Russ the Beast Winner, and Jonathan T. Nadal. If those three could have been there, I don't know. Well, I would have came home, but man, it would have just been one of those, oh man, I don't want to say magical, but dude, it would have been crazy.
We missed you there, Jonathan.
I voxed with Dor when he was kind of flying home in between flights, and I was like, man, I wish I was there.
Yeah, well, there's plenty of opportunity for all sorts of stuff coming up in the future.
Absolutely.
So speaking about, well, that was a bit of the past, so let's go into the present. Now, it's been a while, and actually, I wasn't on the show last time we had you on here, but obviously, you're here to talk about some projects that we know about, and then perhaps mention something that a lot of people don't know about. But could you? I'm going to sort of give the floor to you, because I know that you want to speak about two projects of yours that you're very passionate about, being the ACF and Sonar, so take it away.
Yeah, so I just want to let people know we have a new version of Sonar out. It is still based off of Manjaro Linux, which is awesome. The Manjaro team has put together yet another new build system. It's new and improved and even better than the old build system, and it is quite amazing. And so the new version of Sonar has GNOME version 3.16, which I think, short of Arch Linux, we're probably the first distro to launch with GNOME 3.16. I don't know if Fedora is officially out yet. They'll have Fedora 3.16, but I think they're still in the RC stage or beta stage. So GNOME 3.16, I'll have to tell, I'm sure I said this last time on the 6 months ago or so when I was on, maybe even longer than that. GNOME 3.0 came out. I was not on board. I thought it was completely stupid, idiotic, the way it was set up. It made no sense, and it took quite a while. GNOME 3.12 came around, and I said, you know what? I finally am starting to wrap my head around what they're trying to do with this desktop. I changed a little bit of the way that I use, you know, the computer, and once I started kind of using the tools that they gave me, GNOME started to make more sense. Well, 3.14 came around, it started to seal the deal even more, and 3.16... If you've never tried GNOME before, you must try 3.16. It is amazing.
I'll say if you used any of the GNOMEs after 2 into the 3, and there was anything about it you didn't like, you literally need to try it over again, because it is, I don't want to say overhauled, but it is unbelievably polished now.
Yeah.
Because I was an old GNOME 2 guy. I mean, diehard. Diehard. And when GNOME 3 went out, I literally shrugged off everything GNOME I could. Said, I'm not using any of the desktops. I'm not using Cinnamon, not using Mate. I'm not using GNOME. I'm not using Fallback. I'm using Awesome. Because if I'm going to cut the cord, I'm going to cut it all the way through.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but then I had a touchscreen laptop, Lenovo Flex 15 laptop. And I said, well, what desktops could be more touch-centric? And the only one that really popped out to me is GNOME. And now I know Ubuntu, Unity, supposedly touch. Yes, the main desktop is, but nothing else to me was touch friendly. And I loaded GNOME and I said, this makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. And I will say, they did definitely steal some ideas like everyone does. Everyone steals good ideas from each other. That's computers. But they definitely took some of the ideas from Windows 8 that made sense and brought them over. And then they incorporated their own things that made sense. So to me, that desktop is right now the desktop. Everything else has to catch up to it.
Yeah, just the performance, it's so much snappier now. The performance is there. It's so quick. I mean, it's like it's like I said and Dor said, if you haven't tried out Gnome in quite some time or never tried Gnome at all in the 3X, this is the one to try out.
Well, now, hold on. Let me give my little slice of the pie here, okay, when it comes to talking about the Gnome 3X. I'm on board as well. I really like it. In fact, it's kind of my default now across the different distros that I try. I was also turned off by Unity, and when the transition from GNOME 2 to 3, obviously there's a lot of, what the hell is this? This is so much different. You know, just kind of getting nervous. I don't like this, and then you get out of it. But yeah, it seems like they have gone above and beyond, making it a much more smoother experience, taking feedback from the community, doing tests. And yeah, I love it. And I mean, because if you look at the other options out there, yes, you can go to Mate or to Cinnamon. But as far as the heavy hitters, you know, you're talking about either, you know, KDE or Unity. As far as the larger ones. And out of the three, I definitely prefer GNOME now. And I haven't yet to try 3.16, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, like I said, it's awesome.
Yeah, I'm not going to say it's awesome because I like awesome. Now, there's one feature that might have changed names. Okay, and I know it did change names in a couple versions. The version I'm running right now is called Online Accounts. Mm. It's very misleading, okay? But I encourage anyone to go there, load it, launch it. And what you see is you can get in the desktop built-in integration for Google services. Your email notifications can come up in your desktop UI. Own cloud integration right into it. Facebook, when someone says your name, right in there. Flickr photo integration. Windows Live, Microsoft Exchange, normal email, IMAP, SMTP. You can even built in enterprise login, Kerberos, built in to the desktop itself.
Wow.
Jabber, AIM, GroupWise, ICQ, IRC, on and on and on and on.
What about Trillium?
I don't know. to me, that's the hidden gem in this OS that a lot of people, even if you like it, you might not notice it's there, but go there, poke at it, see what happens.
Yeah, you know what? It's not blatantly obvious where it is. You have to kind of go in the GNOME Control Center, and within there, I believe it's still called Online Accounts, but I know when I built this version of Sonar, I want to say the package name is GNOME Accounts. But I think it says Online Accounts as the package name, like in the system. But it is still there.
It's a horrible name, but because I knew it was there because you told me. So I knew there was own cloud integration. So yeah. I literally pounded on it for like 20, 30 minutes before I found it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's unfortunately, it's not blatantly obvious what it is or where it is.
Well, that's just one aspect of Sonar. So what else makes up Sonar to be Sonar?
So we still have all of the, you know, fantastic screen magnification. We have the open dyslexic font included by default for people with dyslexia. We still have on-screen keyboards for people with low motor skills. We still have eye/head tracking software for quadriplegics to control their computer. So we still have all that goodness. There'll be a couple of new packages coming. I'm not sure how soon. We can get to that maybe a little bit later. I won't cover the new packages yet.
Jonathan, I'm sorry. Let me interrupt you for just a moment. I should have said this earlier, but just in case you're not aware, the listener, Sonar is a GNU Linux distribution geared specifically toward accessibility. So a lot of the things that Jonathan's speaking about is to help people with certain disabilities interface with computers through the use of this special software.
Yeah. I mean, there are a couple of other blind, low vision centric distros. Sonar does cater to blind and low vision people, but I'm trying to meet the needs of every possibility, every disability that I possibly can. I want, you know, anyone. There's a billion people in the world with some type of disability, and I want them all to be able to access a computer. So that's my goal with Sonar.
The dyslexic font to this day blows my mind because. If you have to think of the research that went into that to not only to diagnose dyslexia, but also to come up with a font to where it sort of highlights certain letters and words that gets them back on track to reading. To this day, I find that very fascinating.
Yeah, I know. When I stumbled across it, I was like, man, I was reading how it worked. And I was like, you wouldn't think, I mean, it sounds simple once someone explains it to you how it works and stuff. You wouldn't think something like that could help people with dyslexia.
Right. Well, very good. So it's alive and well, it's kicking, it's got new features, it has the latest version of GNOME.
Yes, and again, one thing I'd like to point out too, since it's based off Manjaro, which this is one of the most killer features for me, is I have an install on my computer where I was running the first version of Sonar that we started building off Manjaro, which had GNOME 3.12 on it. So I've upgraded fully to GNOME 3.14 and fully to GNOME 3.16 with no breakage at all in my system.
Oh, very nice.
So that's another awesome feature about Sonar. It's you know, we're piggybacking on the rolling release concept that Manjaro gives us. So it's pretty awesome.
Very good. And just as a reminder, Jonathan, I've asked you this before, and you've given me sort of a very specific answer. Hopefully you'll mimic it here. If not, I'll guide you. But me, as a user that would not necessarily directly benefit from any of the accessibility-assisted software within Sonar, how can I, just through like a software type of contribution, benefit Sonar?
Could you use Sonar? Is that what you're saying?
Right. If I want to help, for instance, like a bug reporting, should I, as a sighted user, be installing Sonar? Or what's another way, non-monetarily, I guess I should say, contribute to Sonar as the project?
You could totally install Sonar. Yeah, I mean, even if you don't need assistive technology, you could totally use Sonar. I mean, the Orca screen reader comes up talking right away, and you can easily shut that off. I mean, that's sort of the only thing that's outstanding that is running by default for assistive technology. So you could just shut off Orca, and you're just good to go. You could start using it, and you could start poking around with the assistive technology, because, you know, maybe the screen reader isn't reading something that I myself, you know, I'm blind. Maybe I'm not realizing that it's not reading something that's actually there. And you might notice with the screen reader on, oh, hey, I just errored over this and the screen reader didn't read it. And so you can, you know, send a note to me, or, you know, just get a hold of me and we can, you know, get working on that. Or you can try out any of the various other assistive technology yourself. You know, being sighted, it can help, because, you know, there's obviously things I'm going to miss. And actually, speaking of things that I'm going to miss, Larry Bushy from the Going Linux podcast has been a madman helping out Sonar. And the past like week, I've just been nonstop doing Sonar stuff, and I'll get more into the other things that I've been working on. But while in the process of building all these versions of Sonar, I forgot to change the wallpaper on most of the versions of Sonar. And Larry Bushy's like, hey, you know, you realize when the live CD boots up, it has the Manjaro wallpaper, right? And I was like, no.
Nope. That's funny.
So he's like, you might want to, you know, put out some new builds. And I was like, yeah, I guess so. I was like, that's what you get when you get a blind guy building a distro. You forget to change the wallpaper.
Yeah, geez. How inconsiderate of you.
I told Larry in an email, I said, don't worry, most of the people won't even notice.
Right. Yeah. Oh, come on. But in the past, you had mentioned to me that is one way I could contribute non-monetarily. But also, isn't it also true that just by running the current version of Manjaro, if I happen to report any bugs or errors, that is, in a way, contributing to the success of Sonar?
Absolutely, because we get everything downstream from Manjaro. So, yeah, if you just run Manjaro and you see some flaky stuff happening, or, you know, just anything that might be questionable, you can reach out to Manjaro. They can fix it, and in turn, that'll be helping us.
Fantastic. Because I have to say that I've never run Arch myself. That is an adventure that I'm going to embark upon soon when I have some time. I need to dip my toe in that pool. I need to quit dipping my toe in and just jump in. But as far as Arch based distros, I have run Manjaro, and it's one of the more elegant and, I would say, very considerately thought out install processes. It just kind of, because, I mean, I've obviously, me being me, recovering distro hopper, I've installed just about everything. And it was one of the more pleasant experiences. And not only that, but their community is very, very diehard. And man, if you want to talk about someone that, a community that welcomes you with open arms and has a huge resource of information just on the main site, I mean, they are definitely it.
Oh, yeah. They've been a huge help with Sonar. Like, a bunch of people are like, hey, you need a Plymouth splash screen. Let us make you one. I'm like, okay. Hey, here's a few more wallpapers. Here you go. I'm like, okay, thanks. Like, even the Manjaro community has been totally digging Sonar.
Very good.
Awesome. Well, okay, here's a quick question, Jonathan. I noticed when I go to sourceforge.net projects Sonar GNU Linux.
Yeah.
I see literally like 20 different downloads.
Yeah. So that's one of the things I've been working on for the past week. So yes, we have a new version of Sonar, but that's just the beginning. So along with the new version of Sonar, I took a page out of Debian's playbook, and within Manjaro, Phil put a patch into Pac-Man. So Manjaro has three branches. There's the unstable branch, the testing branch, and the stable branch. So Sonar out of the box comes with the stable. But what I did is the new build system makes it so easy. Now what I did is I made a Sonar unstable version and also a Sonar testing version. Now that's not totally necessary because within Sonar, the stable version, you can actually upgrade the entire system to the unstable or testing branch right within Pac-Man if you want to. It does take a little bit of time because it literally upgrades all of your packages into that repo and updates your whole database into that repo. So it's could take an hour or maybe longer. So you can do it. Or now you can just download the Sonar testing ISO or Sonar unstable, and you'll already have that branch running in that system.
Very cool. Now, for the people who are unfamiliar with SourceForge, right next to the link name, there's the date, then there's the size, then there's the number of, I believe, downloads, then there's a little pictograph. So the ones with the more activity are typically the ones you want. But I noticed, Jonathan, you have what looks like .2 behind some of the ISO names.
Yeah.
So I'm going to guess they're newer, but I see still two versions. I see Sonar GNOME 2015.2, but then I see Sonar .net.
Yes.
-2015.2. So what's the net version for versus the GNOME version?
Sure. So the Sonar net is a straight up command line interface version of Sonar. There's no X window installed. There's no desktop, nothing. So the net version boots straight up into a command line prompt with the eSpeakUp screen reader, which is built into the kernel. So you can do, a blind person can do one of two things with this. All right, I guess even a sighted person, but a blind person can either they can install this version of Sonar onto their hard drive and strictly keep CLI and only use CLI tools. Or they could actually build their own operating system themselves from the ground up. It takes a little bit of the harshness out of doing a straight up Arch Linux install, because if you use Sonar Net, after you install it, a lot of the stuff's already pre-configured. It takes out a lot of the first bunch of steps with an Arch Linux install. So if you install Sonar Net, you reboot, you're literally ready to just start installing X, start installing desktop, start installing, you know, so you're not too much further away from having a fully complete system.
Oh, wow. I did not realize that.
So that's what Sonar Net is. So, like I said, you can either use straight the command line stuff, all, you know, for your system, which a few people have been asking us for. So that's what we did. And like I said, once it's installed, you could actually install GNOME, install XFCE, whatever it is you want. You can just install it that way.
Huh.
That's pretty awesome.
Jonathan, have you had the opportunity to read any of the user reviews of Sonar GNU Linux on SourceForge?
I didn't even realize there were user reviews.
may I read one to you really quick?
Yeah. They must not be accessible. I've never seen them.
Okay. So, Linux Rob wrote in a review, 5 out of 5 stars. Supporting a blind user at the moment and sharing the fun this user is having using email and writing documents for the first time. Use Sonar 12.10 on a Pentium 1.7 gigahertz, 1 gig of RAM, and it runs smooth and responsive. We'll be trying the LXDE sonar soon to get older boxes useful to disabled users. Rob B. from the UK.
Wow. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's one heck of a review, because if you think of that, I mean, a 1.7 Pentium.
That's old. That's got to be, well, it's Pentium 4, because Pentium 3 is going to get that high. But
right,
That's some old hardware.
But still, I mean, just the fact that, and this is exactly the kind of user case that I want to see, because if you have someone familiar with Linux and then knows someone that could benefit from this and is helping them set it up, or literally because of the way that you have it set up, Orca starts talking, basically talks them through the install. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. So a blind person can just do it all themselves with no sighted help at all.
Right. Which, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm making an assumption here, but let me know what you think. That if it were me, I mean, it would be nice to be kind of had my hand held through it. But for me to be, if I had an older machine, and if I was either newly blind or just blind for whatever reason, and I wanted to start using a computer, but I'm trying to put myself into the shoes of a blind user being given this for the first time, because it's got to be somewhat magical. I'm given this CD, I put it in the machine, and it boots up, and it's walking me through it because it knows my limitations and what I'm going through. So that has to be a powerful experience for that person.
Oh, no, totally. I mean, when I first started using Linux, like in 07, I think, I had my son. He was like six or so at the time, six or seven, and I would have
him. Is this like the third or fourth kid?
No, first.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He, I would have him install the distros for me because, you know, none of them talked. And so,
right.
You know, so I'd have to have him read the screen to me, tell him what it says, and he'd kind of spell some things out because he couldn't read, you know, perfectly yet. And, you know, so I would literally have him install everything for me because I couldn't do it, you know?
Yeah. And that is something that, as a sighted user, I didn't really consider until recently, because I knew you were coming on, and I thought, what would be an interesting point to talk about with the consideration that you've taken, the care that you've taken to put this software within this distro? And that really has to be an empowering feeling, because if it were me, I would think, well, if this piece of software is within this and it's letting me overcome this big hurdle, I mean, when you talk about installing an operating system as a basic user, no matter what the situation, that can be somewhat of a daunting task. But as a blind user, that's got to seem like an insurmountable task.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So the fact that you've taken the care and helped to implement this into the installation is above and beyond, and that needs to be recognized.
Well, yeah, and I'll say, I don't want to be insulting on us sighted, but we have a tendency to cut the corners when it comes to this kind of accessibility. Oh, you know, the blind guy will just get his friend to install it for him. Let's not worry about that. Well, let's worry about this other thing, where Jonathan literally thinks complete solution, not something to help people, a complete solution from beginning to end. And that's the kind of thoughtfulness you can only really get from someone who this is going to directly affect, dare I say.
Well, and also someone who cares.
Well,
absolutely.
Immensely.
Yes.
Is the word yes. I would put that. Here's the stupid question I got for you here, Jonathan. Looking in the test folder of the downloads,
yeah,
I see Sonar Mate.
Yes.
That's, I'm not calling it Mate.
I call it Mate also.
Well, then you can continue to be on the show.
Okay, so here's my question about Mate. Okay. Yeah. I literally just got pinged weeks ago by one of the devs behind Mate. Seems like an unbelievably nice guy, is what I'll say. I've never used Mate. I've never had a desire to use Mate. But the people I know that have used Mate are hooked on it crazily.
Yeah.
So I got to ask, here's my golden rule about code. If code is done well, accessibility is almost a byproduct of good code. So my question is how well is Mate at being accessible?
It's pretty much where GNOME 2.3.x left off. So which is good.
Okay.
So it pretty much everything really kind of carried over from GNOME to Mate. Which is a good thing. Is the guy's name Martin? Is that the guy that you spoke to?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, he's a wicked nice guy.
Wimperous, Wimpy.
Yeah, yeah. He's been doing everything he can to help out Sonar and to make sure, to assure the accessibility mate. Like, he honestly cares. So it's awesome what he's been doing to help us out. Now, with me, if mate was at the state that it's at right now, like a few years ago, I wouldn't be using GNOME. Hmm. But now that GNOME is as good as it is and as fast as it is, I'm not concerned about mate myself. Gotcha. Mate is very accessible. It's wicked fast. But for me, I'm running decent computers. So, I mean, GNOME 3.16 now is, I would almost say, comparable to the speed of mate. For me, anyways. So I'm not concerned about that. The reason why I want to do mate, though, is there's a lot of blind users that don't like GNOME, don't like Unity, but they kind of put up with it, and they love mate. And there's no really easy mate solution. Although, say that Martin, again, he's the lead developer of Ubuntu Mate. He's assured accessibility within Ubuntu Mate. He included the orchestrator.
But Jonathan, not trying to sound dumb. You've heard that promise before. Have you not?
Yeah. No, but he actually did. I've tried it out, and he actually did what he said he would do. So
that, to me, rings of uncommon valor by a developer to actually say it, to say it's easy. Because a lot, you've heard it more than a couple times.
Oh, yeah.
So for him to say it and to actually follow through, I would tip my hat, but I'm bald and gray, and I'll shine on the camera. So, seriously, Martin, I cannot thank you enough. If you want to be on the show to just talk about mate, the door is now officially open. It's like I've said on the show many times before, I don't care what organizations and groups say. I care what individuals say. This is the third or fourth person that has literally came to me shouting almost about how good Ubuntu Mate is. And Jonathan saying kind words is not an easy task. Jonathan is a high bar of accessibility to cross, and for him to give you kind words is a very, very good thing.
But that's not necessarily to the credit of Martin. That's to the fact that Jonathan is more of a curmudgeon who doesn't like anything.
Jonathan likes a Russian Imperial Stout.
Oh yeah.
Yes. If we had an extra hour to talk about the drinks that I know that Jonathan does like, then we'd be here for the whole hour.
Yeah. But so back to mate though. So it's extremely accessible. There's one or two little bugs that kind of carried over from GNOME that were even back in GNOME 3.2.3.x, which are still kind of a mate, which they're being worked on. But overall, it's extremely accessible. So yes, we do have, I put it in the testing folder because it is definitely not a finished product. It works. You can install it. You can use it. There's a couple of tweaks I want to do to it, which I actually reached out to Martin a few weeks ago, like about a week ago, asking him a couple of questions about panels and a few other things. And he emailed me back with all the answers I needed. So now I just need to implement all the directions he gave me to make Sonar the way I want. And then the mate version will be out of the testing folder into the official sort of, root folder.
Well, that's fantastic. And you know what? It takes that kind of dedication on his end or on the developer side to say, I hear the issue that you're having. Let me try to work on a fix for you, getting back to you within a timely manner and being able to implement it very quickly.
Yeah, and he replied back with a very detailed email. It's greatly appreciated. He's like, literally just step by step. You need to go to this folder. You need to do this. Here's the shell script I use. And he gave me a download for it. And like all kind, he's just super, super helpful. Like, most other developers would have been like, they either A, wouldn't have replied back, or B, been very vague on how they do things to like, so it seemed like they're answering me, but they really weren't. And he went above and beyond the Call of Duty and just really just laid it all out. Cause, a lot of developers of, distros or just even programs are like, no, I don't want other people using yours. All the blind people should use Ubuntu Mate then if they want to use Mate, But he didn't come at it that way.
So Jonathan, let me ask you kind of a tough question then, based on the fact that I would consider you more of a de facto expert when it comes to this type of stuff. But when rolling up requests to developers, whether it be a distro or a specific software, how generally responsive are they? Part one of the question. Part two, is it the fact that they're, is it the fact that the accessibility isn't rolled into whatever project they're working on? Would you guess, or have at least an educated guess or educated opinion on, is it more that they didn't consider it, or that they did consider it, but they consider it too difficult to develop for?
There's a few other variables in there.
Okay.
One, they didn't consider it. Two, they considered it, but they have no idea how to do it. Three, they don't care. And four, I guess it kind of ties in with two. Like, they considered it, but they just have no clue how to do it. They could even search and try to figure out how to do it and still not find the answer.
Hmm.
So I've had mixed results throughout the community. I always, when I first heard about Linux in like the late 90s, early 2000s, I always heard about Slackware. And so I always wanted to try Slackware, and I never could because I needed, accessibility. Well, Slackware never came with GNOME. And then so one day I figured out that they make a GNOME Slack build so you can get GNOME installed on Slackware. So I was like, yes, finally I could run Slackware. So I went ahead, I downloaded it, and it had Orca, but no synthesizer. So Orca couldn't talk. I was like, oh man. So I was like, well, let me email the mailing. Let's see what happens. So I was like, hey, I'm a blind user. I see you have Orca. That's great, but it's missing this one package. You know, what can I do to get it installed? You know, and he was like, oh wow, you're blind? That's amazing that you're even using this. Okay. Well, there's actually a new GNOME Slack build coming out in like a week. So I'm going to assure that that's in there and you'll be able to use it. I said, okay. So literally a week later, installed the new GNOME Slack build. Boom. Orca was in there working and I was able to use Slackware. So that was my first like experience with someone being just that responsive, you know? And I've had various other people respond, like, you know, even Martin, Phil from the Manjaro team. I could be like, hey, I need help with like XYZ. Boom. He responds right away. Now I've had other people where I filed bugs against Chromium like 3 or 4 years ago saying, hey, I'm a blind user. I'm using the Orca Screen Reader. Chromium doesn't work with it. They said, yeah, I'm not going to fix that.
No, wow.
I will say, to me, this is the difference between closed source, proprietary, and open source, but it's also the difference between conglomerates and individuals.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, Chromium, I believe, is more organizationally backed instead of individual.
Yeah. Yeah. The Chromium guy, whoever it was, he flat out said, there's not enough blind users for me to worry about this. I was wow. like, okay, touche. Wow. So I've had, you know, like I said, it's all ends of the spectrum. I've seen people on mailing lists, even somewhat recently saying, hi, I'm trying to tie into the AtSpy, which AtSpy is basically the accessibility stack within Linux. You know, I'm trying to make sure my program uses AtSpy correctly. Can anyone help me? Crickets. I'm subscribed to like every mailing list possible on accessibility. No one answered this guy. And I can't answer him. I don't know exactly. There's literally maybe two AtSpy developers at the most.
So a part of the development of putting accessibility into certain projects can also be ships passing in the wind.
Mm.
Would you say? Because in that specific case you just said, here's someone literally trying to reach out and say, hey, I need help with this, but they're not getting the feedback they need. And if right. I'm putting myself in his shoes, his or her shoes, if I'm not getting a response after a certain while, it's like, do I keep throwing the message out there, or do I just assume that it's not justifiable for me to allocate
yeah.
my resources into fixing it?
Exactly. You know, and it's, you know, and how many times does that happen? Who knows? You
right.
know, like, who knows how many people jump in IRC chat and are like, hey, I need help with this, and they don't get any answers back, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's, it's probably kind of the problem across the board with accessibility, but especially with Linux. Like I said, there's like very little documentation. So it's like, there's so many hurdles. Like, you have to understand accessibility. There's very little documentation. You need to know how screen readers work. You need to know how Dbus works. You need to know how AtSpy works. There's all these barriers to entry. And then when you get people that are actually concerned and care, want to do something and ask questions, then they don't get any answers back.
Right. And that can be defeating in itself.
Yeah. So that's why I always applaud anyone, you know, people, again, people like Martin and Phil from the Manjaro team and like the GNOME Slack build guys. And, you know, I'm sure there's been tons of other people that replied back to me quickly, but you know, it's great to get that great response. And, you know, you just got to take the good with the bad basically, and kind of just keep rolling with the punches.
Right. Now, well, go ahead. Sorry.
Let's see real quick. Martin's in the UK.
Yes.
I do not know if I'm ever getting to the UK. I might. And I literally already Google Plus posted to Martin. If I see you at a conference, Martin, consider a beer and a steak purchased, just because I want to sit down and talk to you about what you're doing, how you're doing things, what you see the future as, kind of thing. Because something tells me you're a name that's going to only become more popular as time goes on.
And let me say, yeah, Martin, that absolutely, anytime you want to buy me a beer and a steak, I am more than willing to let that happen.
Yeah, and again, with so thanks to Martin's help, the mate version will be finalized. I would say less than a month, hopefully. I don't want to say it would be quicker than that, but I'd like to give myself a little leeway. But yeah, so the Sonar Mate version will be finalized sooner than later.
Very good, very good. So, Jonathan, if let's say I'm a developer and I happen to be listening to this podcast, or I have someone that referred me to this episode, is it possible? Because I don't know how much you've done of this, so I don't want to sort of throw this out there as a service that you would provide, but let's say I'm a developer that wants to become more accessibility conscious. Could I contact you for some guidance or help?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And definitely. How would I do that?
Just go to sonargnu.linux.com. There's a contact us page right there. You can easily reach me. There's a mailing list there. There's a dev mailing list for Sonar and a support mailing list for Sonar. You can easily get a hold of me.
Very good. Well, now they have no excuse, because I know that all the developers listen to this show.
Yeah.
I guess the last kind of news about Sonar that's pretty exciting is we're going to have two new packages, and I don't know how soon. I just spoke to another developer that's been awesome with Sonar. He's a sighted person. His name is Mike. He's in the Hacker Public radio community. He's going to help package a few new packages for me for Manjaro, which will then in turn be into Sonar. One of the packages specifically is for Mate. It's this screen magnification software that I found that'll work on Mate. Because GNOME has screen magnification built into the GNOME desktop itself, into the GNOME shell. But Mate does not have any screen magnification. And so I believe it was Matthew Williams, actually, that tipped me off to this package. So thank you, Matthew. I'm finally acting on it. I think he emailed me like a month ago. But I checked it out, and I was like, whoa, hey, here's the solution. So I got a hold of Mike and said, hey, can you mind trying to package this up for me in Manjaro so I can get this in Mate? So then Mate will then have magnification built into it also.
Awesome. And I'll say that's one of the packages, to be honest, I'm almost infatuated with on every Linux desktop, because every time I go to a presentation, I see them using Windows and I see them try to do something, and I keep thinking to myself, you fool, if you use Linux with screen magnification, you could very easily zoom into that area and just show everyone that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So to me, zooming is the kind of thing almost every user could take advantage of if they knew it was there and how to use it. And there's no doubt in my mind, because I work at a place over 2,800 people. We hire all types of people from all different walks of life and with all kinds of disabilities. We have some people with literally like 35-inch square screens where on the screen there's only like two or three letters at a time.
Yeah, it's and they have their face like pushed up against the screen at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I know how important all of these kinds of technology can be, literally, to empower people. If that kind of software did not exist, we basically could not hire those people to do that kind of job.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I don't know what we would hire them to do, but we definitely try to hire everybody that we can. And that was one of the things that honestly made me feel better when I saw them using what I then notice as being zooming software normal. Okay.
Yeah.
We can do that in Linux.
Yeah, and then the second package that we're going to be adding in, this one I'm really excited about. I might have mentioned Blather on the last episode, but
Yeah.
But this one is going to replace Blather, because Blather is basically speak recognition software, and the foundation of it was laid, but it was going to need sort of, I don't want to say a lot of work, but it needed more work done to it to kind of simplify the process for the normal user. Well, again, I believe Matthew Williams tipped me off to this package. It's called Pocket Vox, and it's basically Blather, but with the front end to it finished. So you can now control the entire desktop, and you can. And from what I've read, that's why I want to package it and start testing it out. But from all the documentation I read, it seems like it's very easy to add in your own commands to really customize it the way you want. So this would be basically like a Dragon, naturally speaking, but for Linux. And so we're going to
Well, I was going to say, that was the one thing. You spoke very highly about Blather. You said the only thing it didn't have was that final layer of polish.
Yeah.
Usability on it. And that was the one thing that you were a little bit concerned about.
Yeah. Because we were going to have Blather, you know, in Sonar and kind of have a really standard basic functionality out of the box. But Pocket Vox does come with that sort of a standard functionality built into it. But like I said, it does have that final layer where it seems very easy for new users to add their own custom commands and stuff into Pocket Vox. So it seems like this is a very finished product. So I'm really excited about that. And I'm assuming, you know, we'll even be able to make sure that it works with the installer, so people could actually install Sonar just through their voice.
Huh.
That is damn cool, dare I say.
Okay, and I'll say this makes me feel better. Going down the Pocket Vox page on GitHub, it looks like a large portion of it is either built in straight C.
Yeah, it is.
Which is good. That means speed, that means performance, that means flexibility on different architectures and different levels of hardware. And it looks like there's also some Python. I'm a firm believer Python enables rapid development with very with the ability to have very polished outcome.
Yeah.
So I think that's a very good combination.
I believe the Python is the top layer stuff, and the C is all the back end stuff.
Right. That's awesome, Jonathan.
So I'm excited about that.
Dude, that's what I got to say. Okay, you said his name now twice, and I cannot say it enough. Matthew Williams is one of those guys, Lord D. He knows a lot. He doesn't say he knows a lot, but he seems to know a lot about a lot of different things, to where you'll say something and then he'll almost say, as a matter of fact, well, you could use Pocket Vox. What is this Pocket Vox you speak of? You haven't heard of Pocket Vox? Well, Pocket Vox. And it's like, where did you find out about this?
Kind of. Yeah, exactly. Stuff. Yeah. Like I said, he hit me up a while ago, and I've just been kind of sitting on the emails because I've just been busy doing lots of other things. And finally I got around to, you know, polishing Sonar back up and getting, you know, all the new versions out there. I said, you know, it's time to check out these emails. And so I started checking them out, and I said, whoa, hey, I got some diamonds in the rough here. So
very cool. All right, Jonathan. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. That's pretty much. Oh, and one last thing. I'm never a fan of like virtualization and, you know, running stuff in VirtualBox or whatever, but there's been a lot of people also asking on the Sonar mailing list for like virtual box images, or I'm having a problem installing in a virtual box or whatever. So Larry Bushy, the Going Linux from Going Linux podcast, went ahead and made me a couple of VMs, so we'll be uploading those also, so people could just have virtual box running, import the image, turn on the machine, and then boom, they can try out Sonar that way too.
I ain't gonna lie, the only reason now, well no, there's more than one reason, one of the reasons I want to go to scale is not to go to scale, it's going to be too big. I'm a little bit antisocial. I'll be in a corner sucking my thumb. But I would like to go to scale just because I know if I do go there, I can shake Larry Bushy's hand.
Yeah, I hear
you. I'm going to announce it right now. Door-to-door geek Cody Cooper will be at scale 2016.
Dude, you're not my wife. I don't have to do what you say.
If
number one. Number one. Number two.
Here's the thing. Number two. Forget your number Jesus. Two. I have good ideas, and I know how to implement them within the mind that God, is the door-to-door geek.
You're hurting me.
No, I'm not hurting you. You just know it's coming, and that the pressure is impacting your chest cavity.
Jonathan, trust me when I say this. I understand people wanting VMs. So it's good that that's being done. But here's the real important question. When are you going to have like cloud-enabled Internet of Things Raspberry Pi editions of Sonar? And by that, I just mean, are you, and by that, I'm really just digging into Jonathan. But Jonathan, are you working on a microcomputer version of this for like the Raspberry Pi or something else?
I have been. One of the other guys on the Sonar team with me, we've been working on that. But this is really annoying issues that we've been having with speech dispatcher and it, like the Raspberry Pi, especially because it's got that wretched Broadcom proprietary GPU thing. And that's been causing nothing but problems. And so we can't get Orca to speak right.
Can I get you a Banana Pi or Banana Pro and you guys try that?
I would love to.
Okay. Consider it done.
But yeah, so we do want to do that because also I discovered this would be really, really interesting. This is kind of on the really back burner, but if we could get a Banana Pi or Banana Pi or Banana Pro or whatever working. I just found out the other day that Kodi, which formerly XBMC Kodi, not Kodi Supercoop, Kodi has a text-to-speech plugin.
Really?
So I could then build a Kodi image with this text-to-speech already enabled and make talking media boxes for blind people.
Huh. Okay, well, yeah, brain starting to spin now. Okay. Have you tested this yourself?
I have not, because I, like I said, it doesn't work on the Pi. I had a Pi, but I sent it to my other friend to see what he could do on it, and we're both just like, we don't know what we're going to do with the Raspberry Pi.
Pilots will hook you up.
Okay.
And I just got to say this right now, I don't care. We're not cutting away from Jonathan to talk about craptastic sponsors you've heard of, say, for the last 50 episodes. Okay? We're not doing that. We're pod nuts. Because of all the listeners going and supporting us via our affiliate links and everybody else supporting us from Steve Cherubino, Cody Cooper, Martin Rambo Bando, Tim Bauermeister, Mitch Heyman, everybody who's supporting Podnuts, Nick Shaw at D7, every sponsor we've ever had, we basically propositioned. So we have to thank them. But we're not breaking from ad sponsorship here in this show. Because we don't have to, kind of thing. It's because of all the listeners out there, I'm going to, as soon as this show is done, ship Jonathan Nadeau a Banana Pro so he can do some development on it, because we support those who support us. Jonathan has been nothing but nice and open to everybody I care about since I've met Jonathan. So I want to thank every listener for enabling me to support those who support us.
And I would like to thank everyone on behalf of myself.
I agree with Dora, except for that one time where Jonathan slided me. I just want everyone to know he is not a complete 100% clean angel.
No, I'm not.
No. You gotta have a little bit of darkness with the light.
That's right.
Well, nothing is perfect.
He's never slided me. He's a gentleman. He's a scholar.
He who is completely innocent cast the first stone.
He has a monocle.
If Jonathan does, he ain't going to hit nothing anymore.
Monocle, top hat, cane, everything, right?
but like I said, that was one thing we were taking a look at after we got all this other Sonar stuff, you know, settled. But I would really love to see if I could get Kodi working, and that would be pretty awesome.
Well, also just to have it have something available to put on that new sort of microcomputer or smaller platform, because when you think about it, I mean, even according to the review that we read on the show earlier, using it on significantly old, being able to install Sonar rather on significantly older hardware, that's fantastic. Newer hardware, obviously, anything more powerful, yes. But if you can get a project working on any one of these newer smaller computers, that's just another avenue to bring accessibility to those who need it.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, my brain was turning even earlier when I was talking to Dor before that we started the podcast, where he's telling me about the, I don't remember that, like, USB stick type computer, Dor, the one you're talking about, the...
Well, that was the Intel Compute Stick, possibly? The Vensmile.
Yeah, the Vensmile. That got my brain turning, because there are these, I don't know why blind people still use these, but there's a lot of blind people that do. They call them note takers, and they're basically kind of like these Braille computers, kind of, that let you take notes, and like they're sort of connected to the internet. I've seen some of them that have kind of like Android built into them. But these things cost like I don't know, $2,500, $3,000, something insane what? Like that. And so when you're telling me about that computer, I was like, man, $120, it has Bluetooth in it, it runs off a battery. You get a Bluetooth keyboard, you put SonarNet on that thing, and boom, you have a note taker that costs $200 instead of, you know, $3,000.
So
I'll say this. The two differences with it that I don't know, how long does the battery last? It might only be like 20 minutes. I don't know.
Yeah.
But here's my whole thinking behind this whole kind of thing. Intel Compute Stick, Vensmile, all these little tiny microcomputers like a Q-Box kind of thing. Jonathan does not need a friggin' monitor, okay?
Right.
having this little device essentially in his pocket with an earpiece coming up to his ear and a Bluetooth keyboard mouse thing, it can do everything he possibly needs. So these little form factor computers, to me, can really empower him. And I will say this, Jonathan. I had a cheap, I mean cheap, from Dude, I Want That, which I cannot stop going to, and I really do hate that site now.
You have a problem. Notes. You have an absolute problem, an addiction. We need, I do, you but need
listen,
to,
but listen. Okay,
okay, you justify super, however you want, cheap, addict.
Well, it was a super cheap battery charger.
Addict.
Okay? Well, a cell phone charger. But it was only $20, okay? And it's like 1,800 milliamp. And I bought the thing.
18,000.
And I used its cable. 18,000. And I used its cable, and it couldn't even charge my phone. It would just keep it at the same level kind of thing.
Okay.
So then I took a Raspberry Pi, Raspberry Pi, ran 1080p video off of it, which it didn't run perfectly smooth, but it ran. It, and I put in a loop. It ran for over 7 hours and didn't even take that battery down 50%. It was unbelievable. Then I took a good cord, hooked up to it, and it can charge my phone just fine. So I found out it was just the cord super cheap.
Just the
cheap.
Cord,
so,
yeah.
Right. So there's no doubt in my mind you could get one of these super cheap computers, a super cheap battery, basically connect to it, and you could have an all-day portable computer on your body.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Use as a desktop or whatever.
Yeah, I saw also if someone put this thread into one of the Sonar mailing lists where I think the website is called Pi Top, like PI Top. Mm. And they're making a laptop with the Raspberry Pi. And I was
So
I was like, man, if I could get a talking version of Sonar, that, cause, one of the thread that one of the people emailed into the mailing list, they forwarded the thread of the email. They're going back and forth saying, if I had an accessible operating system, would you like, you know, make it available for blind people? And he's like, absolutely. We just don't have the resources to do that. He's like, if you had something you could offer us, we would love to, you know, offer it as a solution. I was like, wow. So, you know, there's all kinds of possibilities that can happen, but it's just trying to get an accessible, you know, version running on the Pi, which I don't want to say it's impossible. We did sort of kind of get it working, but then the package updated and it kind of put everything back to square one. So,
well, I'll say this on Banana Pi's official website, which is lamaker.com. They do have genuine Arch builds available for download. I don't know how much that gets you closer to your end goal, but I'll also say I did find a, I believe, German developer who's taking that Arch build and he's basically pushing it further, making it better. So he might be able to help. I can get you in contact with him. He seemed like a really nice guy.
Okay.
But this is no, I'm not spewing venom here when I say this. I'm spewing truth. The Raspberry Pi is basically backed by the company Broadcom and uses a closed-sourced GPU inside of it, which causes issues for nearly everything you do as a quote-unquote open developer.
Hater. Hater.
The don't get me wrong, it's very usable. It's the Ubuntu of mini computers. You use it for convenience, not for necessity kind of thing.
Yeah.
The Banana series of computing devices, at least the company states the reason they're making this hardware is to have a completely open alternative to the Raspberry Pi. Mm. That alone makes me want to support this manufacturer. And I don't know anything about them. For all I know, they have mass graves in their backyard of child labor doing stuff. I don't know. But what I do know is at least they're making open hardware.
You heard it here first, folks.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Man. That alone makes me want to support them. So I'm going to have to hear something bad about them besides from some goofy guy who lives by Baltimore, Maryland saying it, because I'm really liking my experience with my banana products. I will say.
Here's my question, though. Are the mass graves filled with closed source hardware?
I don't know.
That have been ripped from the boards?
I'm going to guess they're filled with tofurkey.
Oh, man. They belong there.
Well, then they can stay closed.
Yeah, exactly.
Dear Lord.
Right. And I will say there's a version of Raspberry Pi called Lemedia, L-E-M-E-D-I-A. It's actually XBMC or Kodi. So,
okay.
But for some reason, they call it Lemedia. I think they do it because it sounds fancy.
It's possible.
Huh.
Yeah. Or maybe it's French.
I was just going to say that, man. You beat me to the punch. Are you a boxer?
No. They're Asian.
Okay. So, Jonathan, we're starting to get off on some tangents here, but any other final sort of announcements or about Sonar before we maybe dip into how to support the Accessible Computing Foundation?
I think that's about everything. Like I said, new versions of Sonar, GNOME 3.16, mates around the corner, got SonarNet, virtual box images, so we're rocking and rolling.
Very good. So let's go on to the state of the ACF. Where are we at?
As far as?
I mean, obviously it's still going, but let's say, for instance, I like what you're doing as far as bringing accessibility to those who need it through software and through potentially, like we've been talking about here, exploring new hardware platforms. How could I help you and contribute to your success or your future development?
Well, if you go to accessiblecomputingfoundation.org, which is a mouthful, you can go there and then you can donate a one-time, donation, or you could become a member at $2 a month. You could become a member at $20 a month or $10. It's up to you. I think we have a $50 option. But yeah, so you can make a one-time payment. You can become a member. And, trust me, the $2 a month doesn't make a difference. And, I've had a couple of people drop off somewhat recently. And I don't know if it's like, I've seen PayPal for some reason cancel subscriptions.
After a year. Yep.
And I've seen like people would email me being like, how come you canceled my subscription? I'd be like, I didn't cancel your subscription. I thought you canceled it. And so I don't know.
It's the kind of thing where honestly, you should try to find a way to keep track of those people.
Yeah.
And after 11 months, ping them an email and tell them PayPal is going to stop it because they only go 1 year and then they automatically cancel it.
Yeah. Cause I don't want to like email the people in case, maybe they did cancel. I don't know. And I don't want to email them being like, hey, did you know your subscription canceled? So if you want to kind of pick up the slack, then there's plenty of room for you to join the ACF membership, and we'd love to have you on board. And you'd be supporting all the work like we were just talking about, the Banana Pi and Raspberry Pi and all the versions of Sonar, and, Larry Bushy's helping out a ton, and there's lots of opportunity on the horizon. So you would be helping out. Bridging the gap between accessibility and technology for a lot of people.
And I don't mean to toot my own horn here, but I will say that personally, I've been contributing to the ACF for almost 3 years. And every single time, for instance, today, as a matter of fact, coincidentally, you being on the show today was where my monthly contribution comes out of my account. Every time I see that email notification, I know that money is not only going to a good cause, but it is going to a good cause in the hands of someone who is directing it in the way it needs to be directed, and those funds are being allocated as soon as possible to ensure that this development is fast-tracked and put in the hands of those people who need it.
Absolutely.
So thank you for all your hard work with the ACF, and I'm happy to be a contributor, and at no point have I ever thought about canceling.
Thank you, sir. And I appreciate all the Podnutsians that are currently members. It's greatly appreciated.
Well, and I want to take this moment to say, goinglinux.com. If you don't know about it, goinglinux.com. Go there, click, download, participate. Two of the nicest guys, I'll say, in podcasting, but also two of the guys who are knowledgeable enough and confident enough to say when they don't know something. That to me is a rare thing I'm finding in everywhere in technology, which is one of the reasons why I like listening to them. I know when they say something, they're confident about it. And I know when they say they're not confident about it, well, then let's investigate together kind of thing. And I'll try to look stuff up and I'll send them emails back and forth kind of thing. They're one of the podcasts I will say I've probably been listening to for the longest and never once. Okay. Once I considered dropping it, but that was just because of a radio talk show host that gave me the heebie-jeebies, but that was completely different. But Larry is such a good guy and everyone he has on that show is just good people. So I heavily encourage people goinglenox.com, click download, click subscribe, click to, contact them and send them voicemails and emails whenever you are able, because nothing makes podcasters feel better than feedback.
Yeah. Larry's been an animal with helping us out. Like, he took over the website. He's like, what can I do? I was like, can you make the website not look like a blind guy did it? And he was like, sure. So he stepped in and, redesigned the website. And just even though like a week ago, I said, literally the email subject said a bunch of stuff. And I just spewed out all this stuff. Can you help me with this? I need you to do this on this page. Can you upload this and change all this stuff? And like within a few hours, the email back is like, all right, I did everything except for like this and this. I have to like run and do some errands. I hope that's okay. And I was like, are you kidding me? I just gave you like a week's worth of stuff to do and you just did it all in a few hours. So Larry's been awesome.
Very nice. Very nice. And yeah, if you've never listened to that show before, Going Linux, they have a very good format where they talk about beginner, intermediate, and advanced topics. And they kind of break it up along with a nationally syndicated radio show portion, which is very, very good to listen to.
No.
Pardon me?
They're done with that.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Pardon me. They're done with this. Well, regardless of that, definitely check them out. A fantastic show.
Even more the reason to check them out.
Yeah. And 73s, I think, is the number Bill says at the end.
I believe so.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Definitely good stuff. Now, the only link I wanted to talk about, I have to talk about, because if, God bless you, if you've listened to Linux for the Rest of Us since the beginning, it was literally near episode 1. There's no doubt in my mind it was before like episode even 10, maybe. I talked about this project that literally just got me giddy, excited, happy, interested, intrigued, every one of those things into one. And it was called Open Pandora. Open Pandora was hard getting off the ground. It did get off the ground, but it had a really rough start. Then when it took off, it was almost a little bit too late kind of thing. They kind of missed the mark. The hardware that they were pushing was a little bit, I don't want to say outdated by then, but it wasn't the new hotness kind of thing. And they definitely kept it up, and they kept it up for a long time. And then they finally announced, like maybe a year and a half ago, okay, Open Pandora is done. And they, wiped their hands clean of it. I thought everything about it was dead and it was gone. No, it turns out if you go to pandoralive.info, it's one of the places where they post blogs about stuff. And they announced, quote unquote, I just saw it. It's actually nearing completion, called the Dragon Box Pyra. This is basically the next generation of Open Pandora. So it's a Nintendo DS foldable screen format, full computer, full keyboard, full gamepad, again with the dual SD cards, HDMI out. This is the device I was, before I went out to Northwest Linux Fest, I was asking everyone, look, I want to have a portable handheld gaming experience, but I have to have the battery last for more than an hour kind of thing. What can I get? This is the exact thing I needed on my flight, because this is first and foremost full blown Linux rig, not some half baked Linux like experience emulator crash tastic piece of poo, which I bought from ThinkGeek, but this is actual full blown Linux. And it is going to be coming out. They're in the final stages. They have all the boards basically done and finalized. They have the case basically finalized. What he's showing off is a 3D printed case, so it's a little bit fragile. So as he's putting it together, a couple pieces basically chip off and fly away. But this thing is coming real. And if you have a problem like me, I'm very sorry. But I just told you about something that's going to probably suck a little bit of money out of your pocket.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that, as long as you have the money to spare.
Right. And I will say, I'm just really liking... Oh, and I believe, honestly, if I read this right, this is also going to have in it a 3G antenna. Now, it's not LTE.
Really?
So it is going to... Yeah, it is. It's going to have LTE antenna built into it, too. So... yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Game on that go. Yep.
Game on the go, and dare I say, if I could figure out a way to get Voxer on the thing working, I wouldn't need a phone anymore.
That's right. Well, Jonathan, in closing, thank you so much for coming on the show, but please,
thank you.
Is there anything else that you would like to speak about while you're here? Because, yeah. Like I said, he's so busy, ladies and gentlemen, that we have him on very rarely. Is there anything else that you'd like to speak about and or tease or possibly hint at? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Well, yeah. And if there's any podcast or gatherings you want to talk about, please feel free.
Well, what podcast? Is there something? What are you talking about? Book nuts?
Whatever you want to talk about. It's your time. Whatever you want to talk about.
It's almost
the world is your.
It's almost as if we. It's almost as if we know something that we're trying to allude to, but
yeah,
we're not trying
like
to
that.
Nudge him toward talking about.
Well, he can talk about whatever he wants to talk.
That's
about.
Right, because he's the admiral. He's in charge of this ship.
Yes. I'm steering the ship now. All right. Well, yeah. So me and Tracy Holtz actually, I started a podcast on Podnuts called Book Nuts. So it's pretty awesome. We're talking about. The audiobooks, but if you want to read the regular book, go ahead. But yeah, Tracy and I love listening to audiobooks, so I don't know how often Dora's going to be releasing them, but we got quite a few in the hopper right now. And so we take a book, we talk about it. The first half, we kind of talk about the book vaguely. We don't want to give away spoilers in case people want to listen to the book. Then the second half of the show, we go into kind of the spoiler alert, and then we really dive deep into the book. So... if people like the sound of the book, they can stop the episode halfway through, read the book, and then listen to the other half, or they can just, you know, listen all the way through. It's up to the listener. But so we've been doing that podcast, and that's pretty exciting that I've been having fun doing that.
May I ask a question? This is a general question, not geared toward any specific novel, but have you guys touched on any Cory Doctorow yet?
Actually, no.
Ooh, okay. Well, then you might have a special co-host.
Okay.
Who may worm his way, and I don't know who this person would be, wink, wink, but may nudge you in a particular direction because he's very, very interested in Cory Doctorow.
Okay, yeah, we would love to. We did a Scott Sigler book already.
Oh, very nice, very nice.
So
are you interested or are you interested?
Yes.
Okay, just want to be clear.
Iggy, K5.
Right, and I will say, you guys are hearing about it first because it's not on podnuts.com yet. And the reason it's not on podnuts.com yet is because we're going through a site revitalization, if you will, a reimagining. We're basically starting from scratch.
On our
website.
A phoenix rising from the ashes.
Exactly.
Well, yes, it's rising, but it's actually rising on the other side of the planet because Jonathan helped me use Odesk as an interface to find somebody because on the face of the planet, I contacted everybody I know who does a podcast focusing on WordPress. I focused and I actually contacted people who work for Automattic, people who work for WordPress. And I asked them about how can I take a Drupal website and convert it to WordPress? To which they said, well, what do you mean convert? I said, well, I want to convert everything. Why would you want to convert everything? I said, well, because I have over 1,000 postings to this thing, and they're all media. They're all content via a RSS feed. Half of them really don't understand what an RSS feed is, because apparently it's just basically RSS is a podcaster's paradise kind of thing. To everyone else, it's a second thought. They don't really put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah.
And even the WordPress podcaster guy, I had to explain to him the importance of not breaking the feed, to which he said, what are you talking about? It ain't going to break. 2 weeks later, he updated his WordPress website. Boom, broke the feed. Everybody downloaded all 20 episodes of his show again. So he then learned what I meant by saying that. And he said to me, there is no conversion tool you probably are going to break your feed, even if you use FeedBurner, even if you just upgrade like 4.1 to 4.2 of WordPress. He said, so all you can really do is just notify your listeners when it happens. So thanks to the guy on Odesk, Carlson, he has basically reposted nearly all 1,000 plus shows to our test dev site. When he's done with that, I got a little bit of back-end polish to do. And then after that, hopefully by the end of May, that's my goal, the end of May, beginning of June, we're going to launch the new podnets.com website. Look completely different. And we're also going to launch a couple shows, at least a couple shows, one of them being Book Nuts. And I cannot thank Tracy and Jonathan enough. I know Jonathan has the ability to listen to 5X, listen to 6 books a week, the size of War and Peace. So the amount of knowledge he can give on to us about these audiobooks is quite grand and great. Tracy Holtz basically took the corporate job light lifestyle, put it in a fireplace and burned it. He is now a true at-home country entrepreneur kind of thing. So they both agreed to do this show. So I really do thank them a lot. It's going to take, you know, a good amount of their time to A, listen to the books, but that's entertainment, and then to just sit around and talk about the book. So we're going to have some really good audiobook content. And it's one of the things I really thought for over a year, we should have an audiobook podcast, because it's the same thing as a podcast, just different. And I think people who like podcasts would also like that.
Yeah, Tracy enjoys that I can listen to the books fast too, because he's like, hey, have you ever read this book? I'm like, no. And he's like, all right, let me send you a link to it. He's like, we could do it next week, and like the, you know, we're going to record like in 2 days. And I was like, well, how long is it? And he's like, I don't know, 12 hours. I was like, oh, dude, we'll do it in 2 days. Don't worry. So he sent it to me, and I just mowed through it, and then we did that episode in 2 days. And he was just like, after the episode, he's just like, man, I can't believe you read it that fast.
Yeah, just good stuff. And like I said about Northwest Linux Fest, it has, to be honest, two of my favorite people on it. So it's going to be good stuff.
Absolutely. And then, speaking of podcasts too, I am doing one other podcast currently where I interview people running crowdfunding campaigns. And it's just a cool way to hear about some interesting projects people are working on. So if you want to go to crowdfundingcast.tk, you can see that podcast there too.
Very good. Very good.
Very cool. I will definitely have a link to that into the notes as well. And I will say, I'm really happy you started that podcast, Jonathan, because I heard Leo Laporte talk about wanting to do, dare I say, almost like a Shark Tank-esque show crowdfunding type stuff. But him, he's loaded. At the end of the show, he was like, and then we can give them money. But I heard that and I said, this is the perfect needed thing, because crowdfunding has blog postings. Crowdfunding has YouTube videos showing their stuff. But what they don't have is centralized audio feeds of multiple different crowdfunding things going on. So you can only, you know, so you only have to go to one place and you hear about multiple different types of crowdfunding campaigns. So
yeah,
great idea. Thank you very much for following through with it.
Yeah, no, it's my pleasure. I almost release an episode every day. So, you know, there's days where I can record 3 or 5 interviews. So I always have a nice, queue lined up. So, I've released like 140 something episodes, and I'm, you know, under a year of doing it.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's Jonathan.
Wow. I can't wait to listen to that, because if you are at all familiar with crowdfunding, or have thought about maybe starting your own campaign, what I always like to listen to, or see rather, is the uniqueness, because it really is kind of, I mean, now at this stage in the game where the general populace have heard of Kickstarter at the very least, in order to be really successful or creative, like they needed to do very interesting things with either their sort of promo video or their the levels I can't remember the exact term of it. Oh, the prizes which you gain through the different the goals. Yeah. So yeah, being able to sort of dip into the mind of the people doing the campaigns through this show is very appealing to me.
Yeah, I meet so many interesting people. Like somewhat recently, I just interviewed this guy who's building these rockets for spaceships that are, for lack of a better way to explain it, they're basically reusable. And he's actually talking to Elon Musk, and he's thinking about buying these from this guy. And essentially, since these rockets are reusable, it's going to make space travel like dirt cheap. So up front, you know, it costs, you know, $2 or $3 million to launch a rocket. So there's still that upfront cost, but since these rockets are reusable, the next launch will only cost you like $20,000.
Yeah, I was listening to one of my quote unquote science podcasts, and they said something, I can't remember if it was $10,000 or $16,000 per pound to put something into orbit. And they said, no doubt, when the private sector gets into full swing, it's going to ridiculously drive the price down. So this is the kind of innovation that I think only the private sector can come up with.
Yeah, and this guy is already talking about, you know, mining, you know, asteroids and all kinds of stuff. Like he's like, we're 5 or 10 years away from doing this stuff seriously. I was like, wow. So, you know, so I get to talk to people like that. And I've talked to lots of really cool people just doing really interesting stuff. So it's pretty neat.
Oh, and here's the other thing that I learned from those podcasts. Bill Nye, the science guy, he's called the science guy because he's not a scientist. He's an engineer.
Ah.
So interesting. So Dor, how long before the Podnuts income could put us on the moon to do an episode of Linux for the Rest of Us on the Moon?
Right after scale.
Okay, so
actually you'll launch from scale.
So let's do this. Let's say scale 2016 definitely happening. No later than St. Patty's Day 2016, we're on the moon doing the show live.
What if there's another certain conference going on at the time of scale, though?
It doesn't matter. I shouldn't say it doesn't matter, because here's what I'll say: whoever is paying me more to appear at either conference, I will pick that.
So you're going, never mind. It's too weird.
All I'm saying is that it's been affirmed to me for my experience at Linux Fest Northwest that I am probably a K level internet celebrity.
That's giving yourself too much credit, probably.
Probably, yeah. It's more like a Q level. Yeah, yeah. But I'll take what I can get at this point, you know. Jonathan, as always, it's a pleasure to not only talk to you whatsoever, but to definitely have you on the show and to get an update on your projects, because like I said earlier, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn, I am very passionate about what you do. And not only, I mean, I respect you as a person, but not only your mission and your mission statement as far as the products that you have, I'm happy to be a contributor. But more importantly, I think that I am very proud to make sure to mention the ACF and Sonar in every single episode that I have hosted. More importantly, just to keep putting the message out there, because it is an ongoing project. Even though we may not have you on as often as we should, it's not dropped off development. You're not diverting your attention to anywhere else. It is a continuous project that, more importantly, needs continuous assistance and help.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, and I'll say, here's how Jonathan has changed in the last 2 years. I've seen it. He's changed right in front of me. He is more of a leader manager kind of thing, where he used to be very obsessive about doing everything himself, and he's actually now managed it out to where he doesn't have to do everything himself. He can literally, you know, sit down, relax, and have a drink and not be super stressed every day kind of thing. So thank you for doing that, Jonathan, because you were overworking yourself, period.
Now I know
you want to remain busy, and I know you are remaining busy. So I definitely also thank you for that. But I will say, again, we mention your website, your two websites, every show. We mentioned Think Penguin basically every show. By the way, if you need a coupon code for Think Penguin, podcast at linuxfortherestofus.com. We also mention the Linux for the Rest of Us Club every episode, and we're not getting paid for any of those things. Isn't that weird for a podcast to actually mention something each and every show and they're not getting money for it?
Dor, it sounds crazy. It sounds foolish. Should we stop?
I said it. No. And here's the thing. If you have a company out there and you want to sponsor this show, go ahead and try. We might take your money. We don't know.
Right now,
we don't need it.
We will take it.
Oh, good. So I can stop sending Cody those checks then.
Yes. And I'll say this. The Linux for the Rest of Us Club, I listened to Steve Gibson the other day, okay? Before, previously, a.k.a. a couple weeks ago, you did need a static IP address when you requested a SSL cert that just changed. I'm with HostGator as my hosting provider. I don't expect HostGator to be on the bleeding edge, the cutting edge, or really up to date with this. I do not want to pay $200 a year for that SSL cert because I need a static IP address as well. So I'm going to try to hold off on getting the SSL cert. And I'm waiting on the SSL cert because I do not want to tell people to create accounts on a server that doesn't have an SSL cert. So I am going to start producing videos and putting them up. I'm going to make it basically a private link that I'll just share via the email to the group. There'll be no logging in. There'll be no feedbacking. There'll be no comments, but at least I'll be putting up some content on that website. So that will start happening soon. I want to thank everyone. Also, Cody, next week, I forgot, we have to start giving away BeagleBone Blacks. I'm going to send out another email asking people if you want to be on that giveaway to reply to this email. And we already have people who have done that, so we will have a good size list to pull from.
Yes, because as a member of the Linux for the Rest of Us Club, you are automatically entered into any of the giveaways that we have. For instance, we just gave away a Nexus 4 with Ubuntu Touch installed on it to Chris Hardbottle. And Chris, if you're enjoying the device, please let us know. We would love to hear your feedback.
Nice.
Very cool. That's what community does. Community does things for itself and each other without having prerequisites or things ahead of itself. For instance, we were able to go to a conference. We were able to go to a conference and have fun. We didn't have to basically blackmail people and say, hey, you have to go buy our shirt, or you have to go buy this, or you have to go give us money if you want us to be to this event. We just did it because the community is already supporting us. And we do plan on going on more events. I honestly hope this year to go to at least two more conferences. One of them was late August, Jonathan.
Yeah, FOSCON.
FOSCON, Philly, which is right north of me by a little bit. Plan on going there. I don't even know how long the event is.
Are we going to FOSCON?
It's only a one-day event, I believe.
It's a one-day event.
At
least it was last year.
But where is it again?
Philly.
Philadelphia.
And they have cheesecakes there, right? Cheesecakes?
They have horrible cheesesteaks.
What?
They have horrible cheese. If you like Cheese Whiz, go there and get a cheesesteak.
Oh,
they have horrible cheese. If you want cheesesteaks, you go down to Baltimore.
I don't think cheese belongs on steak. That's just my opinion.
Well, oh, man. I'm going to disregard that opinion.
No, I've been there, and it's fact. And I'll say more than a couple of native Philadelphian enemers, whatever, told me, we tell the suckers to go to these places to get cheesesteaks. We go to someplace else. So I'm going to go to one of those places this time I'm up and see if it's any better, because the places where they send the suckers, it is horrible, horrible. Everything about it's horrible. But here's the big reason I'm really going. It is announced to me, pretty much finalized, almost in stone, pretty concreted.
Just maybe get to it, will you? Quit beating around the bush. What are you, a gardener?
That Tim Tebow is now on the Philadelphia Eagles, and that's why Doris going.
Oh, wow.
No, because Russ, the Beast winner...
Of course. How he lives in Philadelphia, right?
No, he lives. Like 2 hours.
Just outside of Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I think he lives further away from Philly than
I do.
Dude,
if Russ Winter was showing up to a Pepperidge Farms convention, I would be there.
He probably has. I bet you he had a chainsaw in the back.
He probably had a chainsaw.
He looks like he eats a lot of cheese. Not that that's really indicative of what he looks like, but let me tell you, that would be a fact I would bet on.
But yeah, you said it's called FOSCON, Jonathan?
Yes. I believe it's FOSCON.org.
Gotcha. Yeah, because I'm going to try to go there. And of course, I'm going to try to probably go again to OLF. But they still haven't even posted a date yet.
Right, which is frustrating. Hey, OLF organizers, Ohio Linux Fest, you heard me. Find that ball and then get on it. Get on the ball and select some dates. I have schedules to plan.
Or there could be something else that pops up in October or November.
That's very true. Well, but what could you possibly be alluding to?
Well, there's a small, slight possibility that there could be a pretty cool gaming conference in Boston around that time.
Wait, would it be near Worcester?
No, it'd be in Boston. Boston. Oh, man. You know, with this chowder.
But would it be within a stone's throw of Cambridge so we could go to Mead Hall?
Yeah, I think it would be right across the street from Mead Hall.
Oh, my Lord. Goodbye, everybody. I'm done.
So there is a slight possibility I might be putting on a gaming conference. Nothing to do with, you know, open source. I mean, I'll promote it if there's any kind of angle to, but it's going to be focused on, you know, video games and board games and, you know, card games and trying to, you know, promote like indie game developers and stuff like that. So, and there's also, you know, I can't say too much about this because I still haven't talked to the other person yet, but there could be some interesting news that comes out of this conference. So
this is the first time hearing of it while wearing these headphones. You heard it here first, folks.
Yeah, there's very there's a lot of up in the air stuff right now, but I guess there's a very small chance at in October, November, maybe. I need to speak to this other person, but there could be a gaming convention going on.
Very cool. Very cool.
It'd be awesome.
Yeah, awesome. There'll be lots of, you know, a LAN set up and all kinds of awesome things going on. People playing board games, all kinds of stuff.
Cool. So we'll have to have you back on soon. If you are in fact affiliated with, well, but no, you already alluded to that. So we'll have you back on soon once we get some more details with this in order to speak about it, because as long as there's a machine running Linux somewhere at this gathering, then we can justify having you back on the show.
Exactly. Yeah.
There you go.
Well, here's my logic. With board games and table games, why not also have a 3D printer up on the side printing custom game pieces?
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I talked to someone about that. Someone has to literally just buy a 3D printer and offer that service to someone. You know, just build a website and be like, hey, who needs game pieces? Send me the 3D prints or whatever. Load them up on Thingiverse. I'll download it and start making these things for people.
Imagine playing an open source version of Monopoly where you're guiding a little ice machine across the board. Think about that
for a moment. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And a blind mouse.
No, but okay, I'm not going to ask that question. It might be disrespectful. But let's just move on. Jonathan, once again, it's always a pleasure to talk to you whatsoever, but definitely in the context of the projects that you're working on, and we do appreciate everything, and I mean everything that you've done for the community, some of which people know, some of which people don't know. So thank you very much for being on the show. We look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you, gentlemen. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. So, Dor, I believe that was the remainder of the topics we have to speak for today. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Awesome. So, just to give a little shout out to some of the organizations that we want to speak about who support the community, definitely thinkpenguin.com. If you are in the market for any sort of hardware, whether it be a full-on desktop, a micro desktop, a laptop, or in a router, anything along those lines, please visit thinkpenguin.com. And if you are interested in purchasing some items from them, hit us up by sending an email to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com, because we have some coupon codes which we could give to you for absolutely free, which could save you some money on that potential hardware purchase. And we support thinkpenguin.com because they support the community on open hardware, open software, and it's a fantastic organization. So if you haven't yet, please check out thinkpenguin.com.
Yeah, and the thing I'll throw out there really quick, the one extra value thing that I can tell you that Think Penguin does do, because Chris and Robert were at Northwest Linux Fest, is they do sell an Intel NUC at Think Penguin. It is a last generation Intel NUC, but this guy who works for Chris at Think Penguin, Robert. It's hard to put a number, I'll say, on his intellect, intelligence, and ability. He modified the Intel NUC BIOS so it's faster and more efficient. So if you buy one of these Intel NUCs, you're not getting a rebranded Intel NUC. You're getting a improved Intel NUC, okay? Modified, custom modified to basically be more efficient and to be faster. I don't know any other vendor out there who actually pays any level of detail to this kind of thing to actually attempt to improve a product instead of just putting a sticker on top or a custom engraved top on it. So Think Penguin, trust me when I'm telling you people now, go further than the big boys to try to make sure what you have is your best possible Linux GNU open experience on computers.
Definitely. Please check them out, thinkpenguin.com. And like I said earlier, if you're thinking about making a purchase from them, know that simply by reaching out to us, by sending us an email to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com, we can give you a coupon code to save some of your hard-earned cash to make that potential purchase a little bit cheaper. As always, please reach out to our good friend Jonathan Nato, who is literally on the show right now listening to me speak about this at this moment. Go to the Accessible Computing Foundation.org. Is it .org or .com, Jonathan? I'm sorry.
.org.
.org, yes. Go there. You can be a regular donator / contributor for as little as $2 a month for less than half of a cup of Starbucks coffee. You can be giving a little bit of cash to this wonderful organization, which is going into the future, bringing accessible software into operating systems in order to bring technology to those who would otherwise be left behind, those with disabilities. I personally have been a contributor for a number of years. Every single time I see that notification from PayPal letting me know that my money is being taken out and given toward this organization, it brings a warm feeling to my heart. You can have that feeling too for as little as $2 a month. Please go check them out at theaccessiblecomputingfoundation.org. If you want to also contribute in another way, non-monetarily, go to sonargnulinux.org. You can download a custom version of Manjaro Linux geared toward accessibility. Download that and help with reporting errors through bug reporting. But also, if you know someone who could benefit with a disability, whether it being low visibility, blindness, dyslexia, this is a perfectly engineered distribution specifically made for people with those in disabilities in order to make their computing experience much more worthwhile. So check out sonargnulinux.org.
.com.
Pardon me.
Sonars.com. Yeah.
Okay. Got it. Thank you, Jonathan. That's why we have you here.
Thank you.
Me. Yes. Okay. And Dor, where can we find you online?
Easiest place is podnos.com. Just go ahead and click on the contact link. If you want to follow me on social media, even just saying that word makes me a little bit sick to my stomach.
But, come on.
Plus.google.com. Just search for door-to-door geek, all one word, DORTODORGEK. Contact me with any issue, any question, anything you want to about. Everyone gets top priority. No one gets second fiddle in my inbox.
Yes. And thank you for all the work you do. One last question for you, Dor. How do you say the name of the state that I am from?
Oh, jeez. The big O.
It's Oregon. Oregon, right?
No, Jonathan, I'm very sorry. We're losing your connection right now. You're no longer available on the show. I can't even hear you giggling right now, you SOB. So, anyway, yes, please contact Dor. And let me speak from the heart here. Dor is, his heart is completely open to those who will contact him with help. I've seen him firsthand contact people, or pardon me, respond to people who come up with smaller questions, but also go out of his way to do diligent research to answer those more complicated questions. So if you do happen to have a question revolved around Linux or anything tech related that we talk about on the show, hit him up. He will get to you eventually, or you can also throw it to me. I'll probably refer to Dor, in most cases. But if you need to send me an email, please send it to Cody@podnets.com. I'm available for any questions, as it were. And let me quickly address a question given to us by, or pardon me, a comment by Michael Allred. And when I think Michael Allred, I think of the artist Michael Allred, who draws and writes the Madman comic book by Dark Horse Comics. This is probably not the same gentleman. However, okay. Michael Allred wrote to us recently and said, please do the microcomputer show. So Michael is one of several people who are clamoring for us to do the microcomputer show. Door, is it potentially possible, maybe, perhaps, that a microcomputer show may appear on podnuts.com sometime in the future?
As far as I'm concerned, it's a given it's going to come out. The only question is how frequently is it going to come out? How frequently is it going to come out, and how long is each show going to be? Because unfortunately, this is one of the shows where it does require money because you're reviewing hardware. But the good thing is microcomputers are cheap. So what I'm thinking we're going to probably do is basically get a broad spectrum of devices and use them as references for a lot of other devices to see, to say pros, cons, but we're also going to get into a lot more of like the type of functionality, the kind of things you can do with these microcomputers on the cheap. So yes, it's coming. Podnuts.com needs to get revitalized first. After that, we can start to look at these kind of things.
There you go, right from the horse's mouth, ladies and gentlemen. So we're definitely looking, I mean, and plus as a trend, just as a general technology trend, it's becoming a bigger avenue, as it were. So yeah, we will definitely address it because Podnuts has always been very, very versatile when addressing current technology trends and just diehard users. So thank you, Michael, for writing in, letting us know your opinion on whether or not we should do this show, which is something that we've asked for in the past. And if you also think that we should do a microcomputer show, please send us an email to mail@podnuts.com or to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. Let us know what you think or what you'd like to see from such an endeavor. Thank you. All right. Well, that is me, Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, a.k.a. The Ice Machine, signing off. Thank you very much for all of your attention with this episode and all your past listening endeavors. Thank you very, very much. We do appreciate it. And please remember that Linux is not for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.